us belongs fairly to the few, but about 6 billion people no doubt will agree this world is our home, not your property. It's the commons, our right of birth, and you would enclose the land all around the earth. Our future is your downfall. When we cut this ball and chain, you'd sacrifice the public good for your private gain. With our sweat, we built the railroads, built cities on these shores.
Good morning and welcome to Corporations and Democracy for June 14th, 2019. This is the program that examines how corporations dominate our democracy and what citizens are doing to replace corporate dominance with true democracy. I'm Steve Scalmanini with co-host Annie Esposito. Today we want to turn to another aspect of climate action, what people are actually doing in our region, greater region of Northern California, and thus what you listeners can do. And I want to be as practical as possible by focusing on real activities being done by real people in the region. So as a guide, we'll be using recent bi-monthly emails from an organization, the Northern California Chapter of Elders Climate Action. That's a nationwide organization, but again, with a local chapter for Northern California. Our guest is a member of the Coordinating Council of that Northern California Chapter of Elders Climate Action, John Sorensen. John's professional career of over 40 years was in engineering design, corporate management, and entrepreneurship in the aerospace industry, devoted to spacecraft and rocket engineering back in the days of the space race and the moon landings. But in recent years, John moved toward environmental activism and community organizing to transform our culture to one that encompasses the wisdom and caring of the conscious elder. He now supports building projects for homes, schools, and shelters in several Southeast Asian countries, supports startup ventures directed at healthy food consumption, sustainable living, and inner growth, and works with Elders Climate Action as part of his lifelong interest in social and environmental justice. So let's see who's doing what on climate action throughout Northern California. John Sorensen, welcome to Corporations and Democracy.
Hello, Steve and Annie. It's good to be on with you. You hear me okay?
Yeah, we're getting a little echo from our side. Are you on a speakerphone, perchance?
I am. Would that be better if I just put it to my ear?
Yeah, it would be better for our listeners, yeah.
Okay, hold on.
Okay, so we are going to be talking in just a second to John Sorensen, and we're going to get the lowdown on what's happening in Northern California, what you can do to deal with the climate, impending climate chaos, or actually it's going on right now, I think.
Indeed. So.
And also to remind you that this is a pledge drive, and if you can call in and help make this station continue, help keep KZYX green as well as the planet, it's 895-2233, and they've given us a hefty show goal of $1,000. So, bear that in mind, 895-2233, and we'll be back in a minute to talk about some of the two books we have that are relevant and our thank you gifts. So, Steve.
So, John, you're back with us there?
I am.
Okay.
Yes, I am.
Well, let me take a moment, first of all, to congratulate you. After all the years we've been on the program here, 10 years, you're the first genuine rocket scientist we've had on the program.
I use that a lot when I hear somebody say they ain't rocket science. I can absolutely answer with all truthfulness. You're right.
So, can we start with a little bit of information about Elders Climate Action? Since the structure of the program is the recent newsletters that have come out from the organization, at least the Northern California chapter. So, can you tell us a little bit about ECA?
Okay, well, the idea of creating an organization of elders across the country started in about 2011. I had this vision on a vision quest I was on, and got a group of people together. You know, I wrestled with that for a while. Got a group of people together in 2013 saying, is this vision too big? you know, can we handle it? And I got the message back saying, no, we can handle that just fine. Take the lead and put it together. And so I spent a year, 2013, finding people, you know, giving them the idea that a group of elders getting organized and eventually moving into creating a move, well, moving into creating a movement, if you will. We can really have an effect on our nation. And so a group of us met in 2014 in the San Francisco area, about 40 of us, to get started. And we really didn't have any idea exactly what we were going to do or how we were going to do it. But there were two men at that gathering, one of them being Paul Severance from Indianapolis, who had the idea that, why don't us, a group of us, us grandparents, go to Washington, D.C., and it turns out in September there's a Grandparents' Day. Why don't we go there on Grandparents' Day in September and really talk to members of Congress about, we as grandparents are really concerned about the future our grandchildren are going to inherit because of climate disruption. So anyway, that kind of that idea caught on. And by the way, we founded an organization called Conscious Elders Network, and it was set up so that the different branches could set themselves up under it. Well, anyway, with Paul Severance's idea of going to Washington D.C., I gave him encouragement to do that, and as time went on, we created the Elders Climate Action Group, with Paul being the leader of it because he had a community organizing background for that and had some connections in Washington, D.C. So then it turns out in September of 2015, a group of us, about 85 of us, went to Washington, D.C. and had meetings with 44 members of Congress. We actually also, to have some fun, we did a flash mob in Union Station there, a bunch of elders showing up at 8 in the morning mm-hmm. when the busy time was there and broke into song. So anyway, I just wanted to put that one in there because while we do our work, we try to have fun while we're doing that, and we do. So anyway, that's how it got started. And Elders Climate Action grew from there, and today we have a presence in every state in the country, and we also get a lot of inquiries from Canada and actually around the world about how can you help us get started doing this too. Mm-hmm. So there's a yearning, if you will, on the part of elders who are paying attention to what's going on to ask the question, what can I do about this? And so what we try to do is create opportunities and both in education about what's really going on, what are the real potential threats from climate disruption, and what can we do about it, both locally and nationally. And so, let me stop there and try to respond. So I'm not just going on and on here. I could go on for quite a while. So let's have an interaction here.
Well, I would just like to say, yeah, it's really great to have the elders take responsibility for this mess because we are responsible for this mess. So I really appreciate
you got it.
Appreciate that very
right.
much. But then the other half of that equation is we really need to throw our weight behind the efforts of the young people, which are really making a difference right now.
They sure are, yes. And we're trying to do that. We recognize that they need to take the lead because they have the energy and they can see more clearly than we seem to about this future that's coming upon them. So we are really trying to support them in every way we can. And what we want to make sure that they continue to take the lead, and we're there to back them up with our hopefully with some wisdom and guidance that might be helpful.
Thank you for that perspective, because it is something I talk about locally in a group I work with. That this is an opportunity for the elders to follow the younger generation who do see this more clearly, and they're not preoccupied with sort of the status quo and, you know, careers and all those, you know, all the impediments right. that get in the way of this. But they see the bigger picture because they're not yet preoccupied with the other things, and they see what they're inheriting, and good for them. So
some of older people like us have kind of given up hope and, oh, you know, we've seen this before and not much you can do about it. The young people, they're on it. You know, they yes, we can do this and we're doing it right now. Get out of the way.
Now, the Northern California chapter, so that's been around for a few years now. And you're covering, well, you're covering the entire, you know, northern part of the state. From Fresno, interesting, up to the Oregon border. And then activity-wise, you guys are doing, you know, conference calls locally, some of your own organizing like that, I believe. And then this this e-news that you do twice a month is what I found very, very interesting in the impetus for doing the program today. So let's talk about the kind of news that you're sending out on a semi-monthly basis.
Okay. Sure. Well, three of our members are really responsible for this. Is Bill DeVincenzi from San Jose, Marilyn Price from Mill Valley, and Shirley McGrath from Walnut Creek. And we all send articles and what's going on locally to them, but they really assemble this, and I think they do a super job of compiling what's going on basically around the world. This last issue had writing by Greta Thunberg from Sweden, and what she's doing or what has happened over in Europe, and it's inspiring us here. The Sunrise Movement is created in response to that, I think. And then also we see what's going on in California on a statewide basis as far as legislation or executive action on the part of our governor, progressive Governor Newsom. And then we also really focus. You know, Northern California is, of course, a big area, and each of us, wherever we live, have issues that are specific to our local areas, and they're different. They're not all the same. So we try to encompass that in our news, too. So and then the other thing we do is at least once a year, we're really trying to do it twice a year, actually get together physically and share ideas and inspire each other, have some fun together. And what's inspiring to me is our Northern California group is just growing really nicely right now, and it could be very soon that we split it up into smaller chapters.
Okay.
But we'll wait and see on that one.
Yeah. Well, that's a good sign. Makes for some temporary chaos, but it means that you've hit an interest point with the public. So, I found it interesting that these emails include calls to action, and then they talk about where they're coming from, different organizations.
Right.
And while we on a public radio station as hosts don't do and can't do calls to action, but guests can talk about whatever they wish. So. Some of them from the recent emails have talked about, you mentioned the Sunrise Coalition in the Bay Area, the Last Chance Alliance, and the 350 Bay Area. And so there's some action items that you've mentioned in your newsletter, and that's at the California state level. So my compliments to you and your organization for being a sort of a compendium of what other organizations are doing. But for those of us that have a tough time finding all the time to read what all the other organizations are doing and stay up on them. So you've summarized these for people, and that's very handy. And let me mention, at a national level, there's some actions that you're recommending involving Greenpeace, the Food and Water Watch, Friends of the Earth, and the Sierra Club.
Yeah, you know, I'd also like to mention Extinction Rebellion.
Yeah.
I think they're British, but they have a website that has a lot of really helpful stuff on it. Artwork you can print out at home, and legal advice probably pertaining to Britain, but it also helps you understand when you're putting yourself in a situation, some of the things to take into consideration. It's a really good website, the Extinction Rebellion, and there's also a chapter in San Francisco and Marin and Sacramento. It's growing here. I think there's people here that want to do it too. And then you were going to respond to that, but I'm going to hold you off for just a second, because while we're talking about reading, we just happen to have here da-da-da-da-da, Farming for the Long Haul, Resilience and the Lost Art of Agricultural Inventiveness by our own Michael Foley out of Willits, who has tried a lot of this stuff himself. And he's written this very readable book for farmers and for people that like to eat as well, about how to face the coming climate chaos and still be able to grow food and survive. So it's a really interesting book. He resurrects a lot of the forgotten intelligence of people that did this before the industrialization, and all kinds of strategies in here. Farmers are just going to have to rethink growing food. And you can get this book by joining KZYX, or by renewing your membership, or by adding on, or any of those wonderful opportunities. It's Farming for the Long Haul, Michael Foley. And all you have to do is call up Jonathan at 895-2233. Do we have a thank you there?
895-2233. And a few early pledges did come in. Thank you very much to Beth and to... looks like Jaina. I hope I've got that pronounced correctly. I'm trying to read someone else's script handwriting. But thank you for your early pledges. And again, we're offering the book about farming. And for those of you that don't have acreage for such, you can be a fan of the farmers markets, where locals are producing what they can, and they are doing as much local carbon sequestration as possible. And the other... a book that I wanted to mention to you, that which we're also offering today, is a copy of Drawdown. That has been around for a couple of years now. It is the most comprehensive plan to reverse global warming, and edited by Paul Hawken, but numerous essays, actually I think 15 or so chapters, talking about different actions individuals can take and putting in perspective what the most significant actions are versus those with the most influence and the most effect versus others. For example, food waste, I think, is number 3 on the list.
Yeah, reduce food waste. He has 80 solutions, and he's kind of got this from 60 people around the world, experts, and most of them PhD or at least, you know, degrees, various degrees of education in universities from 22 countries. And he sort of compiled the list. It's quite interesting, all the things, tropical forest, educating girls. One thing that he doesn't really get into is, do we have to then go beyond these measures and actually start extracting carbon from the atmosphere? And maybe our rocket scientist here, John Sorensen, can talk about that. Do we need to go one step forward, or are we okay with, you know, solar farms and regenerative agriculture and some of these strategies?
Yeah, well, that's a good question, and I don't know that there's consensus of an answer for that, but from what I've heard, that by putting in, lowering our uses of fossil fuel by using solar panels and wind turbine, wind generated electricity and so forth is not going to be enough. That we have to turn around this chaos that is growing each year, we have to start drawing carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. There's a current movie, an HBO movie, called Ice on Fire that Leonardo DiCaprio is the narrator of. And it's about an hour and a half long, and it's free from HBO. And at the end of that, maybe the last third of that documentary, there's it goes through several different concepts that are being tested now that actually do draw carbon dioxide out of the air, and some of them are quite interesting. And I have to say, I've never heard of them until I watched this film. One of them, there's a Harvard professor who has learned how, with his students, his graduate students, they've learned how to create an artificial leaf that can actually absorb carbon dioxide about 5 times more effective than a real leaf is concerned. And they're now looking at, say, how can we scale this up so that we can use this technology to draw carbon dioxide out of the air. Another interesting phenomenon that's going on is in the field of aquaculture, the farming on the sea, where they are creating these beds of kelp and seaweed coupled with mussels and different shelf fish. And that also is a very effective absorbing mechanism for drawing carbon dioxide out of the air. It turns out that kelp is, again, is several times more effective than, say, a tree is in drawing carbon. So there's some really hopeful technologies that are being developed, and so we have some hope there, which I think we all need. And so we'll see how fast those technologies develop and if they really can be scaled so we can make this big difference that we need to.
Mm-hmm. Hey, thank you so much for that, because I know that it's sort of scary when you start talking about technologies that are going to mess with the atmosphere. Are we going to make it worse?
Yeah,
are there going
right.
to be certain areas that are going to be the losers when others are made the winners? So it's nice to hear about these super leaves and things that are kind of working with nature instead of stirring it around. I have to digress.
I totally agree.
I have to digress here for a minute because the manager, Marty, just handed me a note saying that one of the people who just pledged, Jana, thank you, says, read what I said, my comments. So, yeah, thank you, Beth and Jana, so much. And the comments are, Beth says, thank you, Annie and Steve, for consistently supporting and promoting the common good. And here's from Jana. She's from our sister station, KMUD, who we treasure, both KMUD and Jana. And Jana says, celebrating the work of Annie Esposito, Alicia Littletree, and Marty Derlin. That's way cool. Thank you, Jana. And if you want to join Jana and Beth, and I hope you do, we have another $90 left on a challenge here, and you can make it work for the whole listening community here by calling 895-2233 and joining up. The 9 out of 10 of you that haven't done this yet, hey, come on, it's your turn.
Indeed it is, and if you can afford it, you can pledge at the level to take home one of the two premiums we're offering for the show. That is the book Farming for the Long Haul or the book Drawdown. You just mentioned two technologies. The one of them I had not heard of. I want to mention that. So that's about the kelp and the ocean growing and mussels involved in that. That's something new. So I don't know if that's been mentioned in any of the newsletters. I looked over the last couple and didn't see it in there, but that is interesting information. And by the way, to listeners, a few more things that you cover in your newsletter. There's a little section on victories, good news, the progress that has occurred. So it's nice to get a shot in the arm and read about some of the successes. And then some interesting and relevant articles are put in there. And finally, upcoming events. So for those that want to travel perhaps to the Bay Area and sit in on actual events, or those in Sacramento, those are also covered in the newsletter that comes out twice a month from the Northern California chapter of Elders Climate Action.
And Steve, you've been real involved with the local group, though. We have local groups here right in the county. There's the Mendocino Environmental Center. Alicia Tree is just straddling that with KZUX right now as she moves from one venue to another. We are certainly happy to welcome her here on KZUX, but she's also did a lot of work with the Climate Committee on KMEC, mm-hmm. and the Mendocino Environmental Center. And then, Steve, you've been working with
Well, let me mention the Willis Environmental Center involved. So there's a few things going on locally, a few activities. And I think, John, these being new to you, so let me mention what some of them are in our own county. There is the, here's an interesting acronym, the MCAC. That's the Mendocino County Climate Action Advisory Committee. That's a six-letter acronym there. But that was created... or it was agreed to and committed by the Board of Supervisors a few months ago, and now we're in the stage of actually fleshing out who's going to be involved and what the structure will be. But that is created by the Board of Supervisors with the involvement of local groups in the county, one from the coast and a few inland here, including the Willits Environmental Center in the city of Willits. The Mendocino Environmental Center that Annie mentioned is in Ukiah. And there's a Native American group involved in that creation of that organization and a few others. So that's underway. Staff at the county is working with those groups to flesh out what the structure will actually be. And then there's a group I'm working with. They were actually on the show here about a year ago, a little more than a year ago. That's called Climate Action Mendocino. And they meet monthly on second Saturdays from noon to 2 p.m. at the Ukiah United Methodist Church. That's in downtown Ukiah. So again, noon to 2 o'clock on second Saturdays. We met just last week, and then we'll have about 3 weeks off here while we're doing some other activities. And that is, again, called Climate Action Mendocino.
I just want to mention we have two very young members who just dropped by, and I'm going to invite them into the studio so they can see our equipment. Do you want to come in and see the equipment in the studio? Come on. Come on in if you want. This is our pledge drive. So we have people that drop in, and we are really honored to have some very young members here. Alicia, who is that out there that you have? Hello.
We have come on. Nathan and Caleb, who came in for a drive-by donation. Come on in, you guys.
We lucked out here.
Hi, Nathan and Caleb.
Hi.
If you talk right into this blue thing, everybody can hear you.
Hi, everyone.
Thank you for coming by, and you get to say hi, too.
Hi.
See, thank
you. Hi.
Thank you. Hi. John Sorsen says hi.
They came by with a drive-by donation for the pledge drive.
Well, thank you so much. There's our hope of the future right here in the studio. Thank you for coming.
That's right.
By.
They're going to own this in a few decades.
Yes, maybe less than a few.
Yes.
Okay, so thank you so much.
And the number here again, 895-2233 to pledge support for the station. And to consider one of the premiums we have, again, the book Farming for the Long Haul and the book Drawdown. Take your pick.
Okay.
Okay, so I had mentioned some of the local organizations and what's going on. The other one that's a little bit more structural with government is considering resiliency in the face of public safety power shutoffs. And now, John, you're probably aware that the first of those happened just this last week in the Sierra foothills, and that is likely to be more common in the future, and so preparing for those is one of the issues that I've been asking about for staff. Matter of fact, for those in the inland area, the first report to the public on what the city of Ukiah is doing will be at the city council meeting next Wednesday, sometime shortly after 6 p.m. Probably starts at 6, and these kind of issues are presented usually early in the meeting, so 6:15 to 6:30, something like that time frame. So that'll be at City Hall in Ukiah next Wednesday.
And then you're also on the city council, Steve, so I know that you're looking with the elders for climate action in Mendocino and the city council, that what can the city do to take steps to ensure that new housing has energy efficiency? What are some of the things that need to be worked on?
Well, the state has the ball, is doing most of that. I mean, it's called the Green Building Code has been developed, you know, starting a few decades ago, but that is being tightened up further. And there are some new codes coming out. I believe it's first of next year, early 2020, when those go into effect. You'd have to look online, just look up the Green Building Code to see what's new there. But of course, making sure that those are actually followed is the role of the city. We have our first call coming in, and being the bottom of the hour, we usually start taking calls. So let's see what one caller has to say.
Yeah, we're going to ask John in a minute what the things he's talking about on the state level. But right now we're going to take a call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Judy Burtis in Willits, and I just wanted to let the listening public know that John Hatchek, our third district supervisor, is having a town hall meeting here in Willits at the Grange on Thursday night, June 27th. And everybody's invited to come and share the issues you want to put in his ears, and he'll share some things that he's dealing with on the city, on the Board of Supervisors.
Okay, that's great. Repeat it.
June 27th, 6 o'clock at the Grange, a town hall meeting. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. Okay, and I know that he's interested in the climate issues as well.
Okay, so thank you, John Hatchek, one of our two new supervisors as of late last year.
And so, John Sorensen, you had mentioned earlier that there was stuff going on the state level in the legislature. What are some of those things that we can look to?
Well, actually, you know, Governor Brown did an excellent job getting started on turning California into the greenest state here. And some of the things that we hope continue on by Governor Newsom is the promotion of higher miles per hour standards for our gas powered automobiles, and we had this national set of standards that President Obama supported, and President Trump is trying to return them back to a lower level. And I think Governor Newsom and our Attorney General are really putting together a fight to say, no, let's hold on to those higher standards. And a lot of other states that follow California are doing the same. I think there's like 10 other states that say we want to do that too. So that's going to be a big issue coming down stream here. Another thing that's going on statewide is this sudden concern that we have about plastics, our use of plastics, and different communities are taking up the challenge of getting rid of certain raw single-use plastics. I think that's going to be an issue that comes along in the near term here. I think the other element that is related very much to climate action is that as we go more and more to renewable electricity with solar and wind, it's going to create a lot of new jobs. It's going to be really a jobs project that will be beneficial to our state. And so, again, as much encouragement that the state can do in terms of rebates and tax credits for those kind of projects, those are elements that are coming along. And in other words, they want to keep those in place. What I think is encouraging is different communities or different cities or towns make the resolution to be 100% renewable electricity by a certain date. The state follows that lead, and so I think right now they're shooting to have this be a statewide objective by 2045. Now, here in Truckee, we've got a resolution that we want to achieve that by 2030, and we're South Lake Tahoe and Nevada City, both up here, have done the same thing. So we're trying to pull that together as a Sierra, a greater Lake Tahoe area initiative, that all the communities up here would do that. But there are several other communities around the state that have done the same thing. And as the state gets this news and say, well, they set it for 2045, maybe they can pull it back to 2030. In other words, we can get there faster. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we should be pushing for.
Yeah, the faster the better. If anyone's read about the articles about the opportunity that was missed in the 1980s, which is when the fossil fuel companies first were talking internally about this problem, and they realized how significant it was and did nothing, and actually, you know, turned toward convincing the public it wasn't a problem and trying to ignore it as long as possible. So that makes the urgency for today even more significant. Let's go back a minute. You mentioned plastics, and I wanted to mention something back in your most recent newsletter. You referred to the Plastic-Free Eco Challenge that an organization is doing, and that's right in the month of July. So I wanted to just plug that, again, plugging your newsletter. And also ask you that you mentioned a few cities scattered around the Lake Tahoe area. So are these the city governments that actually made these commitments then?
Yes, they are. In fact, I was part of the group that really put the pressure on Truckee Town Council to pass that and that resolution. Yes, and then the answer to your question is yes, that the town councils take the lead here.
Okay, so I'm going to have to look at what they actually did in writing. I've heard a couple of other cities have done similar things, or maybe it was just declaring a climate emergency. A couple of cities in the foothills area, closer to where we are, in Mendocino County, but sounds like even my own city is a little behind the times on that. So there's some opportunity for advancement there. We have four cities, by the way, in Mendocino County, large county, very rural. But nonetheless, four relatively small cities in it that have the option and power to declare such emergencies and to make such commitments to renewable energy in the future. The city of Ukiah, for what it's worth, I don't think I told you previously that we are one of a consortium of about 16 cities that is part of owns its own power, and that.
Yes.
Okay, so you might be familiar with that Northern California Power Agency, I think it's called. And so our electricity on average is about 70% clean, which creates a dilemma for some of us, including me. It's not clear yet, and I'm trying to research this individually, if it's best bang for a buck. If you live in one of those cities, is it best to go solar in one of those cities, or to invest that money in a program where people would go solar outside the city in a dirtier electricity area, so in the PG&E area typically. So that is an issue that I'm trying to research along with some other people in the group. And that brings me to an issue in the Climate Action Mendocino group. There's a little committee of us that are looking into the issue of investing in clean energy. And by that, I mean for those people that want to move into clean energy and can't do that easily, can't afford it, but those of us that have retirement funds and things, as you probably do, having worked in industry for 40 years, you know, I don't know yet of organizations that are directing those kind of funds into investments in clean energy, specifically investments. So I think there's an opportunity there that's not being pursued yet, and I'm looking at that. Is there anything you can add to that? I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
Yeah, I definitely can. Here we in the Truckee area, and I'll talk about the Truckee area. Mm-hmm. We have our own electricity, our public utility district too, and it's about 65% renewable clean energy. And the town of Truckee has decided that they want to be 100% renewable in their electricity use by, 2022, I believe. And so they've dealt with the public utility district, which is separate, and they've concluded that to make this difference up to the 35%, they're not there. They're going to create their own solar farm at the corporate yard up here. And whether that is going to be remaining as a property or an ownership of the town of Truckee, or there's going to be some private entity that will put that in place and then sell electricity to the town, has yet to be decided.
Mm-hmm.
But they have passed, in creating the budget here, they've created a budget for $1.5 million to build this facility. So they're taking action on it, and that question that you ask about ownership is part of the discussion that's going on right now.
Mm-hmm. Great. That's impressive.
And by the way, I certainly, after your show's over here, I'll be glad to connect you with the paperwork that the current resolution and actually the South Lake Tahoe and Nevada City are using, too. So
this is great.
Help out that way.
Super,
that's
yeah.
Some good connections for you.
The more similar they can be, the better, rather than each city reinventing the wheel on this kind of stuff. So
I'm going to interject with some thank yous here. We're about halfway to our goal. We're at 460. We made a $150 challenge. Our show goal is $1,000, so we're almost halfway there. I hope you will call and join these people who just did. Louisa Aronel, thanks, Steve and Annie, for all you do. Thank you, Louisa, for all you do, too. Thank you, Mariah Gallardin. That's a familiar name here on KZYX. She does the TUC radio, just always there for the latest things that are happening to bring them to you. Here's her comment. Do we have to rename this excellent show Corporations or Democracy? That was going to be one of my questions to you, John, in just a minute. And here's one more thank you from Pele in Willits. He loves public affairs programs, the local ones and fresh air, and he says Annie can relate such grim news with a laugh, makes it easier. Okay, that made me laugh. A spoonful of sugar, he said. Thank you, Pele, and thank you to the other nine out of 10 people who don't usually call. Will you please call now, 895-2233, and keep this operation green.
And again, the two premiums we're offering for the program, among many others, there's plenty of station kitsch, T-shirts and cups and that kind of thing, but the two books we're offering are Farming for the Long Haul by Michael Foley out of Willits and a copy of Drawdown. And let me take a moment to return to the latest newsletter you guys did, because there's one upcoming event that's mentioned, which was a hearing on the infamous lawsuit. So,
yes.
For listeners that aren't yet familiar with the term Juliana versus the United States or versus the U.S., that
right.
is a lawsuit filed a couple years ago that I'd like a little bit of information about. The hearing was on June 4th, so maybe you can give us an update on what actually happened a week and a half ago at that hearing.
Yes, I can. There was three judges that presided over the hearing, and the first, the U.S. government, presented their case of why this shouldn't happen, because basically they said it's not covered in the Constitution that children have future rights that include bad air, or, you know, we should have good air kind of thing. And then attorney representing the 21 American young kids, young people, made her case. And I would say that the judges quizzed both parties, both sides, very extensively. I mean, they really asked a lot of questions, and a lot of them that were directed toward why can't we do this, if you will? Why shouldn't we do this? And there was a conclusion that this is new ground for the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
The three judges... one of them was from California and two from Oregon. They now are taking up to 6 months to digest what they heard and then pass it along to, you know, the idea would be to take it to a real trial. And, you know, we have to wait till we hear from them. But I got the sense in listening to the arguments, which were good, I felt very positive about it. It's going to go forward, that these three judges realize that climate disruption and the threat to our children is real, mm-hmm. and it surely should be the role of the federal government to protect our future.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about all I can say right now. It's still so these three judges are deliberating.
Okay, and that's three judges of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and one point of slight confusion there is if they decide this should go to trial, then where's the trial? Because the trial courts are at a lower level. So how does that work? Would it go to a federal court below them? Or would this possibly, whatever they decide, is that appealable to the Supreme Court?
Yeah, well, I don't know the answer to that. My assumption would be the, okay. I mean, it certainly would end up in the Supreme Court.
Yeah,
but
eventually.
I don't know exactly which court that would go to.
Yeah.
Can't say.
Yeah. And I'm not familiar with, you know, the court system enough to really know myself.
Yeah, so. Me either. Yeah.
One of the things I found frustrating about that case is it's going to take so much time. It's going to be they're going to take 6 months, the judges, to decide whether this can be tried or not. And then it could be like another year before it actually does. And here we are. We're on a countdown. And that just sets my teeth on edge.
Yes, I agree. I the wheels turn slowly, and that's why we have to work locally to do as much as we can while we wait. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Good answer.
One of the issues or items mentioned on the website, on your website, is carbon fee and dividend. And that is a term which I don't think it's heard very much still, although it was talked about by one of our guests a year ago when we first had people on the air here from Climate Action Mendocino. And so could you give us a little update on that and for guests then?
Sure. And that you probably talked to Margot Frank, who is one of your members up here. He's a member of our Elders Climate Action.
Yes. Hi, Margot.
She's probably out listening to this. The idea of the carbon fee and dividend was created and has been pushed by the Citizens Climate Lobby, which is mentioned here in our newsletter. And we all, just about every organization, partners with Citizens Climate Lobby. And they have been taking the position that we need to put a growing fee on carbon fuels, starting at what they put it at is $15 per ton of carbon dioxide generated by a certain quantity of either coal or natural gas or oil, and put it on the price either at the mine or at the well or as it comes into our country at the ports. And this fee would continue to grow at $10 a ton over a period of years, and it continue until it really had its effect on lowering the uses of carbon fuels. Now, the thing that's interesting about this fee and dividend thing is the money would be collected by the IRS and put into a pool, and then it would be divided and given as a dividend to every family, every citizen in the United States. And it would be, if a married couple would get two checks a month, and if they have a child, they'd get three checks a month. And so the point of this is the government doesn't keep the money. It's divided evenly. Everybody gets the same across the country. And so the two-thirds that are in the lower income brackets would actually end up with a positive gain from this. Well, what is appealing about this concept is that because the money is not kept by the government, it is treated as a fee, and it's something that both Republicans and Democrats can support.
Yeah, not a tax.
Now, this carbon fee and dividend has ended up in it's now a bill in the House of Representatives, and it's called Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. And so it's and different Congress, members of Congress have lined up to support this, both Republicans and Democrats. So they're pushing it along. And it's all driven by this organization called Citizens Climate Lobby.
Super. Okay. Before we get further, closer to the end of the show, I would like to talk about some references for the organization and how people can contact it. Again, I've structured the program today around the two recent newsletters that come out. So the Northern California chapter of Elders Climate Action publishes an e-newsletter twice monthly, and it's just packed with information about what's going on, who's doing what you can do and such things. So how can people get the newsletter?
Okay, well, the website you need to go to is eldersclimateaction.org. Eldersclimateaction.org. That's put, that's created by our national ECA, mm-hmm. Elders Climate Action Organization. And then on that website, there's a page for each of the chapters across the country. And the Northern California chapter of Elders Climate Action is referenced there. There's probably a slash reference here. I don't happen to have that, but I tell you what, we can get that to you. But start at that website, eldersclimateaction.org, and take it from there.
Yeah, people can poke around there and find it, although I do have it here, the eldersclimateaction.org/get-engaged/chapters/chapter-directory. So there you are. Those of you that are speed writers got that. But otherwise, just go to eldersclimateaction.org, and then you'll find the local chapter. And there is a place where it actually says contact to receive bi-monthly emails.
Right.
And the email address is norcal@eldersclimateaction.org.
Very good.
Yeah, we are running.
You're ahead of me on that one, Sue.
We're close to the end of the show now with just a few minutes left, and so I want to be sure that we get anything in that you wanted to have there, John, before we have to evaporate here.
Yeah, I do. We are going, there's this national strike that's going to happen on September 20th.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's a Friday. And we don't know yet how we're going to participate in that, but we will. But then on the following day, September 21st, Saturday, we're going to have a Northern California meeting in Berkeley, and we are going to be having it at the South Berkeley Senior Center. We'll be a day-long program. We'll talk about various activities we are doing and have done and are going to be. So we would like anybody to that's interested in what is going on in Northern California and what you can do to help, please come there, because when we get together, in addition to you know, the bonding that goes on when people get together, we have some fun together too. So we want to make sure that news gets out.
Okay, so that's 9/20. That's and that's the national strike.
9/21.
That's 9/21.
9/20 is the strike, and 9/21 is our meeting following the strike.
Okay, yes. And then one of the organizations involved is having activities through the entire week that follows that. I forget which one it is, but I imagine that'll be in a future newsletter. We do have a few months to prepare for that. But the national strike, I know, is being sponsored by the younger generation. These are kids in school that are helping to push this forward.
Right.
So that'll be on Friday, September 20th, and then followed by the Northern California meeting of Elders Climate Action on the 21st in Berkeley. Although I might contact you offline to see what the possibility is of webcasting that for those that don't want to drive that far. But that's a separate issue.
That would be great. Yes.
Okay.
I'd like to jump in here and give people one more chance to get Michael Foley's Farming for the Long Haul, Resilience and the Lost Art of Agricultural Inventiveness. Not only does he give you strategies for planting and how to grow, he also talks about why the current business advice is the exact opposite of what you should be doing. And also he gets into how farms should be structured, and he reminds us about the Mexican ejidos that were taken away from the peasants, but they had been given collective farms, the community farming that worked for people, peasants, for so many years. That's something that could be resurrected. There's a lot in this little, tiny, easy-to-read book, Farming for the Long Haul, and you can get that for $150 by calling 895-2233.
And the other book is Drawdown, available. And let me mention that also on your website there is a listing of partner organizations. So these are ones that you are coordinate with and pay attention to, so that you sort of distill actions down to those you think are best to tell people about in your bi-monthly or semi-monthly newsletter. I thought I'd mention a few of those. You already mentioned Citizens Climate Lobby. There's something called deertomorrow.org. That's new to me. The Environmental Voter Project is there. The Moms Clean Air Force. That's interesting. And the U.S. Climate Action Network. And then for youth-oriented organizations, there's iMatter, which is at imatteryouth.org. Our Children's Trust, I think that's involved with the lawsuit, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it is.
Okay, and that's ourchildrenstrust.org. The Sunrise Movement, you did mention that. The Climate Reporter was new to me, and something called Zero Hour. So, and then lastly, some supportive partners. A few of these were mentioned, 350.org, Center for Biological Diversity, Divest, Invest, Individual. That's interesting. We won't have time to talk much about divestment, but that is one of the issues that'll be in, you know, coming on in the forefront as we talk about how do we really draw down the CO2 that we're putting up into the atmosphere. So I think we need to wrap it up there. We have a few outro items to do. So thank you very much for being with us, John Sorensen of the Northern California chapter of Elders Climate Action. I'm sorry, Elders Climate Action.
Is that right?
Yes.
Did I just tongue-tie myself?
Thank you
yes.
for having me. It's been a pleasure. And good luck.
Yes, okay. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
What could be more important? Thank you.
You've been listening to Corporations and Democracy, broadcast on 2nd and 4th Fridays from 11 to 12 noon here on KZOX and Z. The next edition will be in 2 weeks. That's Friday the 28th with host Linda McClure. That might be a pre-recorded program. Andy and I will return on Friday, July 12th. For further information about what we discuss here on Corporations and Democracy and how to correct the corporate dominance of democracy, go to www.thealliancefordemocracy.org. Thanks for listening.
Not your property, it's the common.